I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine a year where in the future the worst thing has happened. It's dark, it's bleak, and everything has gone wrong because we still drink Coca-Cola.
Oh my God, Zach, what year is that?
The year is 1982.
Oh my goodness. Whoa, this place is much worse than the previous place. Oh God. It's like smoggy and dark and bleak and it's raining and moody and there's Coca-Cola. Oh my God.
Hey.
Oh, hi there, stranger.
Hi. Are you a robot?
What? No, not that I'm aware of.
Well, then you'd probably like this Coca-Cola.
Oh my God, what is this dystopian nightmare that I've come into?
I love drinking my Coca-Cola while playing on my Atari console.
Whoa, well that dates this year.
So many of us love to do that, like my coworker here, who also loves to do it, right?
I love it. It's great.
Yes, and you should too.
Are you guys robots?
No, we are human, but we work for corporations. So who is the real robot?
Who is the real robot? For real, for real.
Aren't we all just cogs in a system at the end of the day?
That sounds like that would make a great plot to some sort of movie.
Maybe. Don't think about that too hard.
Wait, Sandy? Is that you?
Hi. Yeah, I'm also here.
Wait, what are you doing here? Wait a minute. If you're here... Excuse me, Coca-Cola representative.
Yes?
Do you know a man named Sandro, perhaps?
Do I know a name? Why, yes, because it was me the entire time, Zach.
Oh, wow, what a surprise. God damn it.
I got you again.
I'm starting to catch on, though, I think.
That's 12 times in a row I've done that to you.
Yeah.
I still haven't caught on.
Yeah. Nope. That was a real surprise this time.
Hello, welcome to Oldie But A Goodie. This week we're reviewing my favorite Aliens prequel, Blade Runner. Joining us is Sandy, who's back and doing a film bro movie. Welcome to the podcast, Sandy.
Thanks, it's great to be back. It's great to be doing a film bro movie. I feel like, you know, over the years, it's been a wild variety.
It has.
A vast array of different kinds of movie. And it's nice to finally be on a movie that will be taken seriously, you know, by my boyfriend from high school.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Sandy, I only just noticed this when we started recording, but this is episode 269, which means it's been 200 episodes since the worst thing we've ever made you do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That one.
What about that Beach Himbo movie we did? That one was pretty good, right?
That was great.
We enjoyed that. Someone enjoyed that so much they started stalking me.
That's true.
Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, good times. But now here we are. Look at us.
I'm sure that no one will get mad at our opinions on Blade Runner,
whoa,
which we're watching now.
It's a garbage film.
Zach, had you seen this before?
Piece of shit film. Sorry. It's... No, actually. I hadn't seen this film. This is one of those films that I've always wanted to see. It's on the big list, you know, of like a must-see. It's like, it's sci-fi, it's, you know, dystopian, it's right up my alley, and then I just haven't watched it. So I was very excited. Going into this film, I was really looking forward to this, and I quite enjoyed this film. I had a lot of fun watching this. There were some points I had, but we'll get into them.
Yeah, I was the same. I feel like it was one of those films where you stop taking, like, you stop making your snarky little jokes and you just start watching the movie, like.
Yeah.
And, like, my list of notes is quite small for this one. Because I was just kind of, like, vibing and enjoying it.
Yeah. I was really pulled in at the start. Like, I was ready on my phone because someone was messaging me, you know, I was like, whatever sort of thing. And then I just kind of stopped and started watching the film. I was like, oh, wait, man, this film's really pulled me in.
Which in this day and age is no mean feat as well, because...
Yeah.
Exactly.
God. I have an attention span of it, just 10-second clips, you know?
Yeah, that's something that Blade Runner failed to predict, isn't it? The fucking...
Yeah. That's the only thing it failed to predict, I feel.
It was a very 80s portrait of the future, I feel like.
Yeah.
It was very, like, I had a hard time conceiving the look of it as, like, not looking vintage. Like, when it came out, it probably didn't look vintage, but that was really hard to conceptualize for me. I was like, this is vaporwave. Like,
Yeah.
But it doesn't know it because it invented it.
That's kind of the thing I love about the old sci-fi movies, is they can look super futuristic and super old at the same time.
Yes.
Because it's what people in the past predicted the future to be. And so, yes, we still use Polaroids in the future. Absolutely. Like, yeah. I'm down for it. On my television screen that looks, you know... tiny.
Like a box.
Yeah.
Just a little box, yeah.
Oh, it was great. I love that.
Well, I mean, this movie is like, yes, it's set in the future, but I don't know if it's on purpose, and it could just be because it was made in the 80s, but it's got a strong, like, noir feel to it that, and I'm not sure if that's on purpose and if that ages it or what, but...
I suspect that it is on purpose. I think that the movie is, like, stylistically, it's a noir. It's this, like... kind of mystery thriller bounty hunter story, and yeah, it takes so many, like, visual cues, story cues from, like, 1940s film noir, and even Rachel's outfit, like, if you look at it, it's like a 1940s power suit via the 80s, and her hair is like victory rolls via weird future robot, like, it's definitely meant to be like a 1940s film noir, but in the future.
He's in a trench coat. There's rain. It's all happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's smoking cigarettes inside.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Even the androids.
And there's fucking Venetian blinds everywhere. The blinds that fuck. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Only blinds that fuck. I think I don't even know the name. I don't even know the name of other kinds of blinds.
No.
That's it.
The shitty one that tears. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, no. I know exactly the ones you're talking about. Oh, they suck.
But yeah, we should probably point out now, I will ask Sandy if you've seen this before in a second, but I will also just say now as a preface, because it is Blade Runner and there's like 7 different cuts of this movie for some reason.
It's true.
We watched the final cut, which is the only version to watch, because none of the others have the Ridley Scott sign of approval, which doesn't mean much anymore after his recent couple of... After Prometheus, it doesn't mean much.
Well, hey, he's just old, okay? He's just... Let him die in peace.
That's what I want Prometheus to do, die in peace.
I quite, you know, I will say, I quite enjoyed The Last Duel.
I liked Last Duel.
I thought The Last Duel was super fun.
I did like Last Duel. I haven't seen Napoleon, but...
Oh, Napoleon sucked, but... Well... It was like, it was fine as a movie, but it was like a movie about a guy who the director clearly hated and is basically just a character assassination of one of the most powerful, like, military leaders in history that doesn't even, like, explain why he was a good military leader. Oof. But whatever, like, it doesn't matter.
Not that you're salty or anything.
I wouldn't say I'm on Napoleon's side. I mean, our listeners will know that I'm very much... a British Navy fan.
You are.
Yeah. I remember from a certain episode, like...
From a certain episode, historically...
This podcast has forever been anti-French, so...
Exactly. So, historically, Napoleon, I could care less, but I just think it's not... There's not a lot of integrity in that film.
In fact, the film was great. Fuck Napoleon.
All this to say, Ridley, I love him, but he's an old man yelling at a cloud.
He is. Why is he making Gladiator 2? I don't know. Look, he made Alien, which is one of my top 5 movies ever. I love it. So, you know, he is a great director.
But he's a boomer, you know? Like, he's old, and Someone needs to put him to bed.
Yeah.
He needs to go to bed.
But yes, we are going to be talking about the final cut, which is, yeah, the actual director's cut. Because there is a director's cut, but they didn't let Ridley Scott make it. So it's not really a director's cut.
Yeah.
So then he made the final cut, which is the actual director's cut. And is the canon version of the movie if you go by the sequel as well.
Ah, there you go. Mm. Well, that's good to know.
But yes, before everyone starts to yell at us or whatever, it's like, ah, which one did you watch? Did you watch the happy ending one or the actual ending one or the one with the, like, I think in, like, the theatrical cut, they changed the ending and they also added in, like, a bunch of Harrison Ford voiceovers to explain in way too much detail what was happening.
That, oh.
I guess it matters, yeah, a lot which version you watch because there's so much ambiguity in the story that the cut can actually change the story quite a lot, whereas with some movies that might not be the case.
But Sandy, you hadn't seen this one before, but you had seen the sequel?
Yeah, I saw my father's movie, Denis Villeneuve. Daddy. Yeah, I saw his one. But yes. I hadn't seen Ridley's grandfather, you know, yet.
So. Yeah.
But I love them both. I think they're both masterpieces. That's my take. That's my hot take. Props to Denny for his being a little less rapey.
That was one of the, like, 2 points I had for this movie.
But, you know, like, we get it. You know, we don't get it, but we accept it.
He's an old man, all right?
He's an old man, yeah. I mean, he did make The Last Duel, which was very good, but also, really, Scott, should you have made that?
I think it was worth being made, or whatever. Anyway, when we do The Last Duel, then I'll come on that episode and we can bitch about it.
Yeah.
Today we're talking about.
Yeah, we'll get to it in spoilers, but that is definitely, like, one of the big parts of the movie that I think holds it back a little bit for me, but
it almost feels pointless. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels pointless. I'm like, if you're gonna do something like that, at least have there be a character reason as to why he would do. Anyway, we'll get to it in spoilers.
Yeah. Hey, Sandro, is this the first time you're seeing this film?
Nah, I've seen this like 3 times before.
Yeah, I bet.
I don't remember. I saw it for the first time a while ago, and I was like, it's fine. I don't know. I never really, like, this time around, I think I really got it more than I had previous times. And maybe that could have just been because I was very sleepy, and this is a very sleepy sort of movie. Like, it's you just kind of sit down and watch it.
It's vibe-driven rather than, like, narrative-driven, if that makes sense. It's not character-driven, it's vibe-driven. And the vibes are strong, like, top-notch vibes, top tier.
Yeah, and, like, the dialogue isn't too important. You don't have to pay that much attention to it. It's more just, like, characters' faces and, yeah, like, the vibe of the...
But some of the dialogue is like, ooh.
Is it possible that you watched different versions of this film beforehand that sucked more than this one as well?
Maybe. I can't remember the first time I saw it, yeah, maybe I watched one of the...
Was there Harrison Ford narration in it?
Maybe.
Do you remember?
I can't remember. I wasn't, like, too young to watch it, but I also was kind of like that weird middle ground where you can watch a movie like this, but, like, only appreciate, like, half of it. I was, like, at that age. And then I think I rewatched it before the sequel, and I was like, that was okay, but I loved the sequel so much better. And now I think they're both pretty equal, actually. They're both as good as each other.
Oh, there you go.
There's not a whole lot to say here without getting into spoilers. This movie does, of course, star Harrison Ford, who? At the time, he's a grumpy old man, Zach.
Oh, yeah. I think I've seen him in that Indiana Jones film that came out with time travel. That was good.
Harrison Ford is in this. I think, yeah, he was 2 Star Warses deep at this point, and he wanted to be killed off in them. I think Raiders of the Lost Ark has come out at this point. So he was already, like, an action star, and I think that kind of led to why this movie bombed in the box office initially, because it's not an action movie, but it's also a sci-fi. So I think the disconnect for audiences being like, well, it's got Harrison Ford in it, and it's set in the future, so this has to be action, right? And then it just didn't do very well, because it's all talking and vibes.
Here's what I think. I think people are laboring under the misplaced belief that Harrison Ford can play, like, smooth, sexy action stars, when in reality he mostly plays, like, really autistic misogynists.
Yeah.
And I think And he does that really well. But I've, like, never experienced him as, like, you know, the Clooney-style smooth operator. And I think, like, I don't get Harrison Ford as a sex symbol. I know I'm veering slightly off the action star thing. You know, I think there's a connect there. Or a disconnect, maybe. Because,
yeah.
He's kind of just a really weird little guy, mostly.
It's true.
And this really kind of highlighted that rather than downplayed it.
That's fair. I'm going to throw it out there. To each their own. And he has very piercing eyes. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
16.
Yep. But I do like his delivery of the lines. And I think he worked well as this sort of character who's, like, kind of over it all.
Oh, yeah. He's always great in those roles.
Yeah, true.
And wants to be done and just, like, tossed into it. Because that's like him in real life. He's over it and he wants to be done. But people keep putting him in movies.
Yeah, I always get the feeling that Harrison Ford kind of doesn't want to be there. Like, whatever role he's playing, whatever movie he's in, he's just, like, would rather go home.
Yeah.
Which is, it works well, if you're a smuggler roped into helping this young Jesus boy, or you're a washed-up hitman that kills robots that aren't people, but are they, though?
But they kind of are, because they're not really robots, are they, guys? They're, like,
no,
just more clones than anything, or, like, lab-grown humans.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, bleeding real blood and shit, you know?
Ah, which was very interesting, considering that the movie Prometheus retcons Blade Runner into being a part of the Alien universe.
Oh, shit.
So, the replicants that we see in Alien are future versions of the replicants we see in Blade Runner.
Nah, whatever, Ridley, that's not true.
Which is so dumb, but I love watching Blade Runner and watching it as like an Alien prequel, because it's so funny and it just doesn't really work at all.
It doesn't.
That's
someone
so
needs
funny.
To put Ridley to bed. He's tucked it out.
Tuck him in. Give him a nice cup of cocoa.
But that means that if Blade Runner is a prequel to Alien, then Predator has already happened, because that happens in the 80s or something.
What?
So that means that at any point during Blade Runner, random Predators could come down and kill everyone, which is very funny.
And in the future, they change it from real blood to, like, weird white blood sort of thing.
I feel like they do that to dehumanize them, right? Like,
yeah,
that would be
yeah.
the reason why you'd do that.
Because that's what I would do. That was one of my things. It's like, why do they have to bleed real blood? How do you... But this is getting into spoilers, so you know what? I'm going to shut up now, but I'll talk about it later. The whole real blood thing.
Sure, yeah. I mean, shall we begin?
Yeah, we should probably finish it up and get into some spoilers.
That's right. Let's rate the movie and then move into the spoiler section of the podcast. Sandy, is this an oldie or a goodie? Or do you think it's something a bit more?
Ooh.
I think it's definitely a goodie. I don't know, yeah, maybe even a greatie, but like...
Ooh.
I don't, like, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, like, I really enjoyed it. Think it's just a beautiful piece of work. Seminal, influenced all sci-fi that came after it. I don't know if it's going to be, like, my Christmas rewatch. In terms of, like, how enjoyable was it? Was it a rollicking ride? Was I, like, connected to any of the characters? Well, no. But, like, I thought the fucking owl was really sick. Like, you know, I don't know. It didn't resonate with me on a deep level.
I agree.
Except insofar as that it's, like, a beautiful piece of art that I can appreciate.
I'm going to rate it a goodie. And I just think it's just, like, a really good film. And it's a good piece of art, you know? It's like you go to a museum, you see this gorgeous piece of art, and you're like, wow, that's a good piece of art. But now I've seen it, I don't need to go to this museum again, you know?
I get why my ex-boyfriend was obsessed with this piece of art. Like, I get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm going to give it a goodie as well. I think, it's like a really beautiful art piece with, like, maybe, like, one or two accidents on it. Like, a couple mess-ups where you're like, this is, like, a flawed masterpiece. It's
yeah.
It's like a really great piece of art, but it's got a couple problems. It's just a couple little problems.
Like, you can see a bit of a blotch on the hand, you know? It's
yeah,
not the
exactly.
perfect piece of art, but, you know.
Yeah. No, I think it's really good. I think it holds up really well. A movie like this lives and dies on its visuals, and the movie still looks pretty incredible to this day. So, Yeah, three goodies for Blade Runner, and now it's time for the taglines before we get into
the
spoilers. Yeah, this movie, of course, it bombed. It cost $30 million. It made $40 million. They weren't able to sell this one to the general public, which is very funny because then the sequel also bombed.
Ironic.
So Blade Runner is just a franchise that is always going to bomb. It's kind of like Tron. It's never going to do well, but it's always going to stick around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cult classic.
But here are the taglines that helped this movie not make any money. You got to give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down. First tagline is, "Man has made his match. Now it's his problem."
I like the start. Maybe the second, we didn't need the second half. I like man has made his match. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's evocative.
I'll give that a... If they had cut it off there, it would have been pretty good, actually. I'm going to give that a shaky thumbs up.
Yeah. Like a half, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, how about a chilling, bold, mesmerizing, futuristic detective thriller?
It's a lot of words, but I think they all apply. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll give it a... I'm not as keen on it.
Sandra's reading of it, I think, didn't do it any favors. Yeah. I think Sandra was, like, stacking the deck a little bit there by making it sound dumb. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. You need to turn it down a bit, Sandra, but I'll give it a shaky thumbs up as well.
He was putting his finger on the scale, you know.
This is the tagline for the cut that we watched, so it's the tagline for the final cut. A futuristic vision perfected.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of bland, yeah.
Does what it says on the tin.
Yeah, exactly.
And the final tagline is, "The star of Raiders of the Lost Ark and the director of Alien take you on a spectacular journey to the savage world of the year 2019.
Are you talking about sex icon Harrison Ford? Hell yeah, thumbs up. Woo.
I don't think so. That was not good.
Can't see why this film bombed.
Yeehaw! It's me, real-life American Sally McSeller, and I'm here with another promo that you're going to be hearing every episode for probably a month. You know what Sandro and Zach hate the most here on Oldie But a Goodie? They hate boring movies. They love good movies, they love bad movies, but they hate boring movies. And that's what you can hear them rant about over on Patreon.com this month. It's the Donnie Darko sequel, S. Darko. Here's a clip.
But do you know what the S stands for in S. Darko?
What does the S stand for in S. Darko?
I know it's not the fun, fake, fun facts yet, but I just wanted to say.
Yeah.
It stands for fucking shit. That's what it fucking stands for. Shit Darko is what this movie's called.
That's right, that's right.
Because it's fucking shit. And it has caused me no end of anguish and pain. And it might be one of the most painful films that it's caused me physical grief in real life.
This one was really bad. There were like multiple days where I sat down to watch it and I just didn't.
Yep.
I just didn't watch it until it was too late. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to watch it now.
Yeah. No, it definitely took me a couple of days to watch this film.
How many days? 3 days.
3 days. Was the exact, which is ironic in a way.
Man, I didn't even know this movie existed before these two boys reviewed it over on Patreon. And now I fucking hate them for telling me the movie exists. It sounds god awful, but you know what isn't awful? Their review, which is just an hour of ranting over on Patreon.com/OldieButAGoodiePod. Get the whole back catalog of bonus episodes, plus you can get ad-free episodes so you never have to hear my voice ever again. That's something else that we hate here at Oldie But A Goodie. It's ads. Aside from the people who sponsor this podcast, they're cool. Anyway, patreon.com/OldieButAGoodiePod. Woohoo! Alright, spoilers. We'll get into spoilers. If you haven't seen Blade Runner, well then, how about you go and dream of electric sheep? Because you're an android who hasn't seen Blade Runner.
Whoa!
Yep.
They bleed real blood, but he states at one point in the film that he's never killed a real human. He's always gotten an android, but how would he know if they bleed real blood?
He wouldn't. And also, I don't think they are androids. Like, they're not robots. They're replicants, which is essentially, like a synthetic human. Like, they're made out of flesh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, they gene grow them, so they're like made out of flesh, bone, DNA, all that sort of thing.
So I'm wondering, is that the case in the Philip K. Dick novel, or was that just for the movie?
I don't know.
Because the novel's called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Anyway.
Yeah.
The only other thing I would probably say is that their weird eye thing they have is kind of robot-y, yeah.
Every time that was on screen, I was like, wow, that's cool.
It's a great effect. It's like, yeah, seeing cat's eyes flash in the dark.
Yeah.
The retinas, like, was really cool.
But maybe, Zach, maybe he's like, I've never killed a human before because his memories are made by they're fake, and he is the replicant.
Yeah,
I get where the, like, controversy or, like, you know, the ambiguity comes in here, and it's probably, like, the drama of not knowing, but I honestly think it doesn't really affect the story that much if he is one or if he's not.
No. I like that it doesn't affect the story if he's an android or if he's not.
Mm.
Like, it shows the fact that even if he's not an android, he's still kind of a robot.
Yeah.
Just doing what the corporation asks.
Yeah.
Like, that's showing you the point of the film is that, like, there is no difference.
They're the same, you know? There's no, it doesn't matter. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, because it doesn't matter, right?
Well, that's something I picked up on this rewatch that I hadn't before, was all of the extras in the background are walking around like robots. Like, they're all just, like, walking in, like, a straight line with their hands all kind of, like, waving the same way. Like, everyone in this movie acts like a robot, aside from the robots who are, like, leaping and then, like, jumping all over the place and doing all this fun stuff, which is really interesting. I hadn't noticed that before.
Who is the real robot?
Exactly. But yeah, I don't think the sequel really answers whether or not he is an a replicant either.
I think it suggests that he's not.
Yeah.
But if he was, it's still possible, because in order for him to have conceived a child with Rachel, robots would need to be able to do that. Or replicants would need to be able to do that anyway. So he could be from that generation. But it kind of doesn't matter.
Nah.
Yeah.
You know, which I think, honestly, is kind of the point, like you said, Zach, of the movie, is that they're the same.
It wouldn't change how he acts through the film.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Which proposes it, what is the difference between them? Like, isn't he just a hired killer at this stage, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with the assault scene as well, is like, she's obviously a replicant, and he's like, well, I'm a human, so therefore I can do this, I'm a mad lad. But then it's like, oh, but then if he's a replicant, is he then programmed to act like that towards everyone? And I'm just like, what's going on here? But I think that scene is just, it was the 80s and it's aged poorly. I think that's just what that was. But
yeah, honestly, same.
Well, that brings up the interesting fact, because the test they do to test someone to see if they're a replicant or not, is that they have to show emotional responses to, you know, prompts and other things, that sort of thing. And that's kind of how they figure it out. Except she, the female lead, she shows emotion throughout the whole film.
Mm.
And it's implied that it's because of her memories.
It's because she thinks that she's a human.
Yeah.
Therefore, she is.
Yeah. But that's the whole thing. It's like, well, she's clearly... She cries at one point. Like, there's clearly a lot of emotion here. So what is the difference? What is the difference?
What are you actually testing for? And it actually seems like they're testing for that eye thing.
Yeah.
The little flash that you get. Yeah, anyway.
I think that's part of it. But also, like, it took... The test with her took like 100 tries or whatever it was, they said, right?
I think I have a foolproof way of testing for robots in this universe. Wait 4 years.
Oh, yeah. No, that would do it.
I think that'll work, yeah. True.
That would do it.
Because otherwise it seems like they're basically the same. Like,
yeah,
the only real difference is that maybe they're super strong and good at stuff. But then otherwise the only real difference is that they die.
Yeah. I loved all the scenes where you see them doing something that a regular human shouldn't be able to do, like putting their hand in liquid nitrogen or grabbing boiling things, punching through a wall.
That was good. I do like how Roy goes all Freddy Krueger at the end and just pokes his head through walls and yells one-liners. It's very funny.
I love Roy. I think Roy's my favorite character.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's really interesting.
He's just a boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the ending, because I think, like, in my head canon, it's because he is deteriorating, right? Just as a person, right? Mm-hmm. So his mind would also kind of be deteriorating as well.
Oh, right, yeah.
I got the sense that his hand, there was something wrong with his hand before he stabbed it.
Yeah.
As well. Like, he was losing functionality in his body.
Yeah.
Well, we saw a shot of someone's hand doing that earlier in the movie. I can't remember.
I think it was his.
It was his hand.
Oh, it was his.
It was his hand, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Throughout the film, he's, like, trying to make sure he's still functioning. And he's like, I'm running out of time.
Yeah, no, that entire ending with Roy is fantastic. I like as well how the famous line, where like he goes through his memories and he's like, it will all be lost in time, like tears in the rain and all that. I think Rutger Hauer actually wrote, like he like rewrote the whole script for that scene, and like he basically was in charge of all of his dialogue.
Good.
And that's why
it slaps. Yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah, like it works really well because he's a good actor, but he's not an amazing actor. And so to make particularly an emotional beat like that work really well, yeah, of course have the actor write their own dialogue and then they'll be able to do it perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a good way
to
do it.
I disagree, Sandro, because after this film I think he's a pretty great actor.
I think that's probably the best scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Because then you start to actually think, like, the implications of their existence, you know, these lives that are so short and so brutal and they, you know, off-world, like, you know, they're almost a different planet, a whole different species of being.
Yeah.
And then they just get snuffed out, you know, for insurance reasons. It's pretty wild. I think it really kind of puts it into perspective. Like, not just that it's cruel to do this because of how we relate to them, but it's cruel because of how we can't relate to them and how unique they are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and because throughout the film, it's showing you that they, like, there isn't much difference between them and us. Like, the whole film is based on that. So when he actually dies because of this, it's like, oh, shit.
Yes.
Like, you know, that's kind of fucked up.
I like as well how, yeah, like, he dies after saving a Deckard from falling off a building, which is, like, thinking about it, yes, he kills his creator, but aside from that, the replicants don't harm anyone in this movie. It's all it's all the humans who are the ones who are like, shoot you on sight.
Yeah.
And then the replicant saves the human at the end. It's like, oh, okay.
It was really stark for me to watch Harrison Ford, the supposed hero of this movie, shoot a scared woman in the back as she was running away from him.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
the optics on this are not great. Like, even if you're like, oh, she is a robot or they killed someone at some point, it's like, he's just an executioner for this subclass of people. Like, this is not a hero.
No.
That's why he doesn't want to come back. He doesn't want to do it.
Well, potentially. He still does it. So I don't feel, you know, I don't feel a lot of empathy for him there. But, like, it's interesting that, like, they could have gone the route with this movie where it was ambiguous and maybe the robots are evil and, like, it could have been way more grey morality. But instead what we have is, like, explicitly a protagonist that is doing villainous acts on behalf of the villains for the entire movie until the end where he, like, gets forgiven but doesn't really, like, earn it.
Yeah, like, rebels against the machine.
Well, yeah. Well, he doesn't, though. At any point, he doesn't rebel.
Yeah.
Well, like, his plan at the end is just to run away. Like,
yeah.
It's not, he's not really...
I guess he's not rebelling, but yeah.
He's not really rebelling. And as we see in the sequel, he doesn't. I won't spoil it at all, but he doesn't really do anything to stop anything that's going on. But he is Harrison Ford, so he's watchable.
Well, I don't think he's meant to be the traditional hero, and I think that's sort of the point.
I suppose. But barely even an anti-hero, like...
He's just, like, a guy.
Yeah.
He's not very good.
He's just a puppet who does bad things. Yeah.
Well, that's the point. He's just a guy, and she's just a girl. And it's... Can I make it any clearer?
I think you watched a different movie.
He's just a girl. But, like, the point being that he's, like, he's not perfect, and neither are they. He kills his creator, but I think that's more out of frustration that the creator never gave them a chance to live,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
They were always doomed to die.
I think at least with Roy, he has, like, you really understand his motives, and he has
yeah
clear values that he's acting yeah in line with. Whereas Harrison's character is a bit more like honestly weak. Like he just kind of does what he's told and Forrest Gumps his way through.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? He acts more like a drone,
yeah.
a replicant, than all the replicants, right? He has to do what the machine tells him.
And we never, like, know his backstory, but he maybe has one, which I feel like is a great way to lean in into is he a replicant or not, because it's like, well, as they say in the movie, if they have memories, they're easier to control. And this guy is definitely being controlled by his work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love to hate that boss guy who was just like, you killed another one. He has zero empathy for the replicants.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
I think that was M. Emmett Walsh, who's mainly in like Coen Brothers movies.
Oh, yeah.
And he always plays like, he's just an arsehole in everything. He's just like a wisecracking arsehole. He's great. He's so good in everything that he's in. Yeah. Yeah. No, he was a lot of fun. I liked, I don't know what the guy's name is, but the other cop guy with the walking stick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He was an interesting character.
We don't know anything about him. He does origami. He knows who's replicant and who isn't, which is the ambiguity near the end with the unicorn. But, like,
yeah.
We don't know anything about him. He's just a cool presence. He's just on screen, and I'm like, this guy is sinister, but I got no idea why. Like, what's going on here?
It's because he has a scarred face. That's literally the only reason. He's got scars on his face.
I like how at the end you see the little unicorn, so it's implied that he went there and saw her and didn't murder her,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. Good on him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like, the unicorn is because we see Deckard, and this is all added just for the final cut as well. I think this was all cut from all the other versions. But, like, we see Deckard dreaming about a unicorn, and then when the guy with the walking stick, like, he makes origami earlier in the movie, I don't remember who he makes it for, but it's implied that he made something related to, like, a replicant's memory to kind of freak them out a bit. And that's what he's doing here at the end, is he's like, hey, I saw your dream about a unicorn. And so it's like, is that what's going on here? Or is it just a random unicorn origami thing? I don't know.
Yeah. Is it a coincidence, you know?
Exactly.
Or is it that he's seen people's memories, you know? Just like Harrison has seen her memories, right?
And I think he does get one of the coolest lines in the movie, like, right at the end, where he's like, to Deckard, he's like, it's a shame that she won't live, but then again, who does? And I'm like, that's cool.
Mm.
That's a cool line. Mm. I like that line.
I think it's the last line in the movie.
But I guess we can go right back to the start. We won't go through the plot of this, but Zach, what are some beats and stuff that you really enjoyed throughout the movie? We'll just kind of go through.
I really liked how there were flying cars, but they were few and far between.
Mm.
It wasn't, like, packed with, it's not like the prequels where it's, like, jam-packed with flying cars and other things. It felt a bit more realistic for a futurescape where there's, like, it's mostly still just cars and other things on the ground. But there's a few flying things, mostly for, like, police or, like, the occasional taxi or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it isn't congested airways. I love the dystopian city. I love the giant Bass Pro Shop company building. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I have a note on the ziggurat, too. I was like, love how they brought back ziggurats in the future.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dune did that as well. I feel like there are ziggurats in our future. Whether it's Denis Villeneuve and Dune or Ridley Scott.
Yeah. Well, sorry to break it to you, but it's actually in our past. It was 2 years ago. We missed
Jesus Christ.
You know?
The flying cars are really cool. I love the design. Apparently, this movie is cyberpunk. I don't know if I would necessarily say it's...
I would say so.
It definitely inspired cyberpunk, but I wouldn't say that it is cyberpunk.
Well, I wouldn't say it's cyberpunk, but it's very cyberpunk-y.
Yeah.
And as you said, it inspired cyberpunk, so cyberpunk became more like this.
Yeah.
And it is very, like, a lot of cyberpunk is about a dystopian future city.
With flying cars and replicants.
Yeah. So, like, it's pretty cyberpunk.
The visuals on the car as well, and, like, it, you know, it just goes down to how this movie is entirely shot in the dark and it's constantly raining. But, like, the visuals, there's one scene where I think a cop is, like, hovering above the ground talking to Deckard, and it just looks... It looks incredible. Like, you can't tell that this was made 40 plus years ago.
Yeah.
It's so well done. And I do like how, yeah, like, George Lucas definitely ripped parts of this off for Coruscant.
Oh,
like, there's much stuff in the prequels where I'm like, oh, that's Blade Runner. That's Blade Runner.
Yeah. I was thinking it the whole time.
Although, I think this movie, there is a scene where a bunch of, like, Jawa types run up to Decker's car like jump on it and shit. And I'm like, okay, but that's stolen from Star Wars.
I don't, yeah.
Yeah, and steal the thing.
I was like, what is the deal with little people in the future? Because some of the little people are robots. Like, that's clear in, what's his name?
Sebastian.
Yeah, Sebastian's house.
Yeah.
And but then you get these gangs of little people roaming the streets. Are they meant to also be robots? Or, you know, what's the deal? Because you kind of don't see that in real life so much. Like,
it's true,
gangs of them going around kind of being menaces. They usually, like, you know, just hang. They're, you know, they're regular dudes who just, vibe. So, what's going on there in the future?
I'll say there. My theory is that they're, like, illegally made replicants that are made to go around and, like, loot places and other things.
I mean, yeah, that's as valid a theory as anything.
Yeah, that's my theory on those things that steal, like, the radiator off his car or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Because if they're, like, just regular people, he's implying some, like, weird stuff about little people, so.
Yes, yeah. Well, there are, like, a lot of, like, designs in this movie that are not alien, but you're, like...
People are a bit weird and freaky, like that guy in the weird coat.
Yeah, like, a bit weird and freaky, but not to the extent of, like, a Star Wars or even the recent Cyberpunk game. Like, not to that extent.
You know, it was giving like, the Capital Hunger Games. Like,
It was. Yeah, that's a good... I like that.
Which,
honestly,
probably went the other way around. Like, it was probably, like, the Capital took inspo from, you know, the racing hats that they had inside the fancy party. Like, all the little... You know, those fucking horse racing... fancy, like, fascinators that women wear.
There was
a lot of them for a nightclub, which I guess is, like, a future thing.
It was a fancy nightclub, though, right? So people gotta be fancy, you know?
I love that every animal you see is implied to be a robot, though, or is implied to be, like, a synthetic animal.
Yeah. I liked the line. It's like, do you think I would be here if I could afford a real snake?
Yeah.
You know, like, I liked that line because it, you know...
It implies a lot.
It implies that real life things are very rare nowadays, and you can only really get replicated ones.
Yeah.
And, like, there's barcodes on scales for the snake and all that. Like,
yeah,
that's kind of wild.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something else I liked about it, which helped make the world of the movie really weird, was there's only, like, two sorts of sets. There are really claustrophobic, cluttered sets where whenever you see an actor, there's so much stuff around them that you're like,
I'm feeling
claustrophobic.
Yeah, I got, like, acid reflux imagining dusting those, like, weird little walls.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, with their divots, those future walls in everyone's fucking apartments that had, like, weird divots and shit in them. And I'm like, that is going to fill with dust, like... You're giving me anaphylaxis.
Yep.
Just looking at this shit.
So there is either locations like that or where we are first introduced to where Sebastian lives, just giant empty spaces. And there's no in between.
Mm-hmm.
There's only cluttered claustrophobic rooms or rooms where there's way too much space and the actor is, like, just, like, drowned out by their, like, surroundings. There's just so much going on.
Well, that's funny because... Sebastian is both, because you have that open, like, this entire building to myself sort of abandoned thing, and then he goes into his house, which is just cluttered and claustrophobic because of all these, like, replicated creatures that he's filled it up with, you know?
Yeah,
it's like a toy shop, except instead of toys, they're people? Question mark?
Yeah.
It's wild.
Well, I think it's meant to kind of straddle that line.
Yeah.
Look, they're both toys and people. Yeah, it's really cool. The part where he's like, no housing shortage here, was fucking triggered by that.
Yeah. The only thing in the film it got wrong about the future.
I was like, thanks.
To be fair, the whole point of that is that, like, everyone's leaving here. They're abandoning Earth and going to, like, the outer colonies, is yes. what it implies.
To get attacked by xenomorphs.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, that's vitally important.
Very important.
Yeah.
This is a prequel to Alien.
Anyway. Yeah, thanks, Sandra, for reminding me. I'm deleting Prometheus from existence.
God.
No, but, like, the whole thing is the only people left are, like, the super wealthy, you know, in their mansions, or the super poor.
Yes.
Those are, like, the only two that are sort of left here, which is really interesting, because it goes back to that sort of android bit of, like, the poor are treated just as badly, if not worse, than
the slaves, yeah.
The replicants. And it's like, yeah, they are slaves to the rich. And it's like, well, you know, what's the difference again? That's the point of the film.
And I like as well how, yeah, like, most people have gone off-world, but in this, and also in the sequel, we never go to space. We never see anything that's not on Earth, which I like that a lot about,
me too.
About this franchise.
It's kind of like, because it makes space or the colonies out there into this kind of paradise that you'll never get to see. Slash hell that you never get to see, because that's where the kind of replicants are trying to escape from.
Yeah.
It's like, we see all this advertising and other things. It's like, oh, go to the promised land, all these things. But, like, really, it's probably all lies. You know, it's probably just as bad there as it is here, because the androids are trying to escape there and come here.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, I think that's a grass is greener sort of situation.
Actually, I think it's different, because I think, and it's brought up early in the movie where Harrison's like, why would they come here if they know they're just going to get hunted down? And it's actually because they're dying, and the only thing they can think to do is go back to the people who created them, who are.
Yeah. Well, yes.
So it almost seems like they're risking death to kind of try and avoid death, if that makes sense, like, because their death is inevitable. So I think it's less that they're, like, trying to get back to Earth and get away from the colonies than it is about them trying to avoid their kind of pre-programmed demise. It's a, you know, going behind enemy lines almost for them to kind of find the secret. So, yeah, that's my take on why they're coming back.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, that is his motivation, is to try and fix his...
Mm.
Like, you could risk death to avoid death. Like,
yeah.
Oh no, the bad outcome is the outcome I get anyway, exactly, so I might as well try, right? I did like the Rorschach test that they start off with, the replicant sort of thing.
Oh, that opening scene is so iconic. Just everything about it is just, yeah, it's great.
It was very interesting because they don't tell you at first what the test is or what it's about. And so you're just sort of listening to it and it's like slightly off almost.
Yeah.
I will say, shooting a guy for asking about your mother, very emotional thing to do.
Yeah, true.
Dare I say, a very human thing to do.
That's true. Mm. Yeah.
Just thought I'd throw that in the mix.
But also, he doesn't know what a turtle is, but... a tortoise is, but knows what a turtle is.
I thought that was just because he was, like, poor.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
At first, when I didn't know what was going on, I was like, turtle, tortoise, same thing. I'm like, well, it's not, but sure.
Yeah.
I don't want to get autistic up in here, but...
Oh, you're a replicant. You're done.
Yeah.
That's it.
If I'm like, actually, they're like, you failed.
Yeah, you failed.
Yeah.
I'm actually just a very autistic human. Will I pass the test?
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. But what if someone is just kind of a robotic kind of person, you know? How do they know? Besides the eyes, like, I think that's really the only thing.
Yeah, I think so.
I did like the eye designer guy, though. He was kind of cool.
He was so cool. I liked him, yeah.
He was very cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool.
No, I liked how he was like, oh, I know who you are. I made your eyes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you're number 6. You're so cute. Aw. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was just a cool guy. He was like, oh, hey, I do eyes, you know? That's all I do. He does the eyes. Then he looks into his eyes. It's like, oh, I made your eyes, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I'd love to be an eye designer. That'd be great. Because then you could look at people, you could see their eyes, and it's like, I made that. I did that, you know? You'd be proud of your work.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you had that moment.
Yeah, well, wouldn't you like to be an eye designer, Sandro?
No, I think I would make ears, not eyes.
Oh, ears. Why ears?
Because then I can make them look funny. And that's just me making them look realistic.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're going to get fired if you do that. It's like, you give someone too big of ears. It's like, nah, you're out, man.
What else is there in this movie? I loved how they were like, in order to have a budget, we need to put in some product placement. How do we do that? Oh, we'll just set it in a city and put all the ads on the billboards.
And have them just be ads. I was just imagining being like the Pepsi exec who sees this movie for the first time and just absolutely shitting myself. Like, God, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
It could have been us up there.
Just like all of the Atari product placement I love, because it's like, there's a lot about this alternate future that is awful, but the fact that Atari is still around, I think that's a positive.
Oh yeah.
I just love that, like, Atari clearly knew that their, like, demographic were the demographic that was gonna watch this fucking movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
You gotta get us in Blade Runner. Not that that ended up saving them, but
What else is in this movie? I liked Daryl Hannah as Pris. We've seen Daryl Hannah before as the mermaid in Splash.
Oh,
so it was good to see her as this replicant. The scene where she fights Harrison Ford is so... it's weird. And I think it's the sound design. They made her really inhuman sounding for that whole action scene. And I don't know if it necessarily worked, but it was definitely a bit creepy and unsettling.
It was a choice. I wouldn't say I really liked the beginning of that scene where she was hiding amongst the other dolls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was excellent.
That was really fun. Loved it.
Yeah. And the tension sort of builds as he moves over to her. It's like, oh shit!
Mm-hmm. But also, he knows what she looks like from the profiles that he was sent. So I think he knows the whole time.
I disagree, because she like spray paints her face, right? Like,
oh, true.
She tries to look different, and she's got this veil and other things. I think he's still unsure, but as he moves over to her, he's like, huh. She kind of looks like the, oh, shit, as she, like, attacks. You know what I mean?
I get you.
But it is weird that she, like, kind of has him by the nose, you know?
That was weird, yeah, the jumping on him and then...
Yeah, she does some flips, which are cool.
I like the way she runs away. It feels very robotic when she's running away.
Yeah. But it's weird that she does run away. Like, she kind of has him. And then she's like, I'm going to move over here so I can do more flips again. I was like, why does she do that? But maybe that's her programming. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was weird. She's like, I'm going to go over here so I can give Harrison Ford time to get his gun.
I'm not a robot. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. Or are you? How would you know?
I feel like if I was a robot, I would have a clearer direction in life. Like, I would know what I was meant to do. I don't think you'd make a robot and, like, not program them.
Yeah.
So that's my hunch.
I'd do it just to fuck with them. It's like, you're going to be aimless for your whole fucking life. Well, fuck you, man. What the fuck?
Well, then your head's definitely going to get crushed if you're doing that.
Yeah. I'm about to crush your head.
Oh, no. I'm going to get my eyes gouged out in that horrific scene.
That was a fun scene as well.
Yeah. I loved how it's like these two gene, like, architects have this, like, chess game that they go.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
And then the creature they made, like, beats them.
Yeah.
That was a vibe.
And, like, Sebastian's kind of cool with the whole fact that the other guy's kind of smarter than him. Sebastian's just a cool guy. I love Sebastian.
Sebastian's a great guy, and I'm glad he lives.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he doesn't. He gets killed. There's a random line of dialogue in Deckard's in his cop car, and the police are like, this guy called Sebastian is dead. Anyway.
Nope, I don't remember that in the film. Nope, you're wrong, Sanjo.
I actually don't remember that. Anyway.
In my canon, he lives a long and happy life as he inherits all the fortune from the other guy.
Well, he's only got like 1 year left to live though, so.
Yeah, well, you know, you win some, you lose some. I did like the whole detective work that Harrison does. I like the journey of like finding the scale, the classic enhance.
The enhance scene, that's one to bring up.
Classic.
Enhance.
I'm like, at this point, you're just on like Google Maps. Like, Street View inside this photo.
Yeah. Well, maybe it was like AI-powered enhancement now. Nowadays, we could actually do that sort of thing, you know?
That's true.
I like nowadays that we are getting to the stage where we're getting some robots, you know? Give me that dystopian future.
I don't know if you would find the hidden thing in the photo from that. It would just create some new bullshit, but I hear where you're coming from.
Yeah.
That was a good, fun scene. Oh, something else I wanted to bring up was the music as well. The soundtrack by a band called Vangelis, I think. I'm not entirely sure how you pronounce his composer name, but it is excellent. Very groundbreaking, kind of like synth soundtrack that I think only really Italian movies at the time were doing. Like, Italian horrors were doing a lot of this.
Oh, like your Dario Argento, Deep Red, yeah.
But I don't think it would really come across to the Americas yet, but I think it was just a great soundtrack. I loved when there's like a random noise that plays throughout the movie that kind of sounds like a cat howling.
Yeah, what the fuck was that about?
I don't know. It's so odd, but I loved it.
I thought that was like, I thought it was diegetic. I thought like the characters were making the noise when they were fighting or something.
Yeah.
And then I was like, surely not.
I did laugh out loud at a scene, which caught me off guard, because it was a very tense, emotional scene where she asks if Harrison has ever done the test on himself.
Oh, yeah.
And then she turns the corner and he's asleep. I was just not expecting that in the heart of this very dramatic moment. It caught me completely off guard and I laughed out loud. It was quite funny to me.
I think that was the scene where we get that, like, jazz cover of Can't Take My Eyes Off of You as well. That was so nice. I love that moment. Anyway, that there is Blade Runner. Blade Runner is a good movie, and go watch it. We have spoiled it, but you should still check it out. We should talk about the original ending of the movie as well, if you wanted to know about how the studio completely fucked this movie over.
Oh, nice. Go ahead, because I actually have a note about the end of the film, which I was going to mention.
Well, I think they did a sneak preview, which was, it was close to the version that we saw where it doesn't have a happy ending. And people were like, boo-hoo, it's sad. So the studio was like, what we're going to do is, one, we'll put a bunch of exposition in this because people don't know what's going on. Two, we're going to make a happy ending. And there's a happy ending where Deckard and Rachel are driving away from the city, and they go into like a forest or like some sort of like greenery. They're like driving.
It's probably the forest from the unicorn scene.
Well, actually, Zach, what they did for that was Ridley Scott was like, I hate this. I'm going to ask Stanley Kubrick if I can use a bunch of B-roll from The Shining, and I'll just use that as the place they're driving towards.
Whoa.
So the theatrical cut just uses...
That's stupid.
I don't know. Just the fact that, like, there is, like, a part of the Earth that isn't a dystopian nightmare is weird.
Doesn't seem to gel with the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
which is crazy. This would be the first time that studio meddling has ruined a film before. Yeah, that's crazy.
So yeah, that is the happy ending version of the ending. But the one that we got is the true ending, I think, with the unicorn and everything.
Yeah, and what a great ending as well. I love the sort of fight scene where he's like, not killing Harrison, he's just kind of going a little wild, yeah. You know?
He's just kind of fucking with him a little.
Yeah. And Harrison's getting away. His death, very dramatic after he saves him. There was a bit of slow-mo there, Sandro.
I liked the slow-mo in this movie, because I think it suited the vibes.
Yeah. Oh, you did? Ooh. Okay, that was my question, because... You're firmly on the anti-slow-mo group, but I'm glad that you approved of it here.
Yeah, I quite liked the slow-mo in this movie, yeah. No, yeah. It was good.
Because the ending took a while. It's a very long film, this one, but I feel like it was pretty good, you know? It didn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah, no, it's like just under the 2 hours.
Yeah.
But it feels longer than the sequel, which is 2.5 hours. So
it's got a weird pace
to it.
Just because it's kind of quieter almost. Yeah. There's just less dialogue.
There is a lot less going on. Like, I think the sequel has a lot more of a drive to it. Whereas in this one, it's like, there's a bunch of people you got to kill, and that's pretty much the whole plot of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. And then we follow Harrison and his, as we discover this sort of world that they've made.
But yet there are a bunch of sequels and related kind of media stuff to this movie. There is, of course, Blade Runner 2049, which, I mean, Sandy, you've seen it. You love it, obviously.
Super long. So gird your loins for that.
It is. Ryan Gosling, fantastic. Jared Leto is in it, yikes, which is a bit of a downer, but he plays a weirdo, so it's good.
Yeah, it works.
It plays to his strengths then, eh, Lamau? I have a question. As someone who has not watched the latest film, because I wanted to watch this one first, is there, like, a freaky gene animal in that one? Because that was the only thing I wanted to see that I didn't see in this film. Because in real life, they've made rabbits that, like, glow in the dark, right?
Yeah.
Through gene manipulation. Were there any, like, freaky animals, like...
I don't know.
I don't think so.
You know, like a multi-headed giraffe or something like that. You know what I mean? Because we see in Sebastian's home...
Yeah.
We see all these, like, almost toy-like workshop where he's got these gene people... that are all, like, free, like, one has a really long nose, you know, and these all sort of things. And I was like, oh, that's cool, yeah. He's, like, experimenting almost with genes. And I would have liked to see some, like, cool, freaky animal, you know, where they've been, like, here's a lion, but with the body of a zebra or something, you know, like,
yeah,
done some wacky stuff.
I think there's, like, a tiger or something in it. I don't think they really do much with animals in the sequel, though, yeah. There is a bunch of animated stuff. There's an anime TV show called Black Lotus that is a sequel to Blade Runner. The main story of that revolves around a female replicant as the main character.
Oh, which okay.
Is a bit different.
Is that
the other
still
ones.
A prequel to Aliens?
Oh,
or
this is all a prequel to Alien. So the connection to Alien is in Prometheus.
No. Oh, fuck. Why did I open my mouth?
In Prometheus, there's Peter Weyland who sets up the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, which is what everyone works for in Alien.
Yeah.
He directly says that Tyrell was a mentor to him. So there's a direct link between the Tyrell Corporation and the Weyland-Yutani Corporation in Alien, because Ridley Scott needs to stop. That's what that whole thing is about. There's also, because this is based off a novel called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by...
Yes, Philip K. Dick.
There are three sequel novels to that novel called Blade Runner 2, 3, and 4. That are written by one of Philip K. Dick's friends.
Oh.
And they look terrible, but they exist. So if you want more Blade Runner, there's three novels. And apparently Amazon are working on a TV show and that's going to go ahead, which is very funny.
Oh, that's interesting.
That just like with Fallout, of all of the companies to make a movie or a TV show about Blade Runner or Fallout, it's going to be the dystopia company.
Oh, true, actually. The capitalism, yeah.
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 Hell, I mean, they all are, to be fair. It's not like Disney's better than Amazon, let's be real.
Yeah, but like, Amazon have drones, right? They're drone delivery, right?
You think Disney doesn't have... robot slaves, Zach.
Oh, they have a replicant Disney, I'm sure of it. Like, you know, he runs the corporation as this immortal replicant, I'm sure of it.
You know it.
Mm. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh.
When you walk through an art museum, what happens?
You see some interesting things, you see some not so interesting things, and if you're like me at all, you're probably a little bit sleepy.
Well, grab a cafecito and listen up. It's Art Slice, a palatable serving of art history.
I'm Russell Shoemaker.
I'm Stephanie Duenas. We are not your daddy's art history podcast. We are both artists, so we look at art history through that perspective. We cover the artists you know and those that have been ignored for so many different reasons.
We look at the context of the time, we compare it to today.
We don't dumb anything down, but, and this is a big but,
hey-o,
we like to have a good time, okay? Nos gusta to goof around, all right? We have hungry pantry bonds that might startle you. It's a long story.
We feed them art materials. Art is just a visual language, so in order for us to interpret what we think it's saying, we hijack the work.
Right. How do you like that for an art heist?
Exactly. And ultimately, we decide if it belongs in our Art Slice Museum on top of the Art Slice Hilltop.
So if this all sounds good to you, join us on Art Slice, a palatable serving of art history.
So that's Blade Runner, but Zach, we got to come up with our own remake of this movie because we can't leave anything alone.
That's true.
We got to recast Blade Runner.
We really got to hammer in the aliens connection in our remake for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. All right, we can do that.
No. That was a joke for legal reasons. That was a joke. Oh, I hate that.
So we're going to come up with a new director and recast a bunch of characters from this movie. I don't know why we're doing this. Out of a lot of the movies we've done this year, this is one we don't need to do.
I was thinking Ryan Gosling for the, like,
Ryan
the
Gosling
lead. I think that'd be good.
Well, yeah, let's start with the main character, Rick Deckard. Sandy, are there any actors working right now who give you Harrison Ford in Blade Runner vibes?
So, like, yeah, autistic misogynist.
Yes.
Let me think about that for a hot second. I mean, Harrison Ford, just get him back in there.
Yeah.
Just have him play the same role again. But
he's like, I retired from playing Blade Runner. And I'd be like, well, god damn it, you're the best we got.
Yeah.
No, let me think about this for a second. I feel like, you know, Tom Hardy, you know, would do a good stoic. Doesn't talk much.
I think Tom Hardy would be good. Yeah. Well, I mean, it depends what sort of remake we're doing.
Exactly.
Zach, if we're remaking Blade Runner, are we, like, doing a Total Recall remake and making this for the normies?
No.
That
would be cringe.
Making it more artsy?
Can we keep the artsy level where it's at, you know? I think it was pretty good. I think what we do is we take what's there and we expand on it. I want my wacky zoo of, like, freaky creatures.
Right.
That's number one on my job. I say we explore the world, right?
We make it a cartoon on the Disney Channel.
Ooh.
We give it to Alex Hirsch. And, yeah, we just make it really weird, man.
Yeah. Maybe we could try exploring some of the off-world that they never explore. You know, we could do that. Like, maybe we don't follow the slightly rapey detective and, like, choose someone else, you know?
Maybe we do, like, a replicant-focused thing.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
I like that idea. It can all be from Rachel's point of view or Roy's point of view, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that would actually be cool.
Mm.
I like that idea. I think that would be good.
I think it'd be interesting seeing her, like, how she was, like, raised.
Yeah.
Mm.
With these fake memories being implanted. Like, The start of the film is her waking up, and it's just it seems like a normal day for her sort of thing, but that's actually her first day. But she doesn't know that because she has memories up to that point.
And here's the thing, you cut between her and the niece whose memories it is.
Yeah.
Oh. And you imply that, like, she is, like, the niece is her in the past or something, and then you're flashing back to the memories, but then you have them meet, and it's, like, a twist.
Yeah. I like that, yeah.
We could, after this film or whatever happens, she's, like, going out to find the niece whose memory she has sort of thing.
That sounds good. All right, so we're doing more of kind of, like, an alternate version of Blade Runner then. That kind of doesn't work for my pick of director. I was going to be really cynical and say that Zack Snyder should do it.
No, I've got it. You guys, I've got it. Sofia Coppola.
Ooh, I like that a lot.
Right? Make it real feminine, real pouty. And she's good. She does a vibe. She runs on vibes. And I think for Blade Runner, that's a thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
As you said, it's all about the vibes.
I feel like given the Marie Antoinette treatment, like,
yeah,
make it about this, like, woman's absolute, like, deterioration.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, then if Rachel is the main character, we should probably cast her first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just looking at, like, some female actresses and trying to think, like, who would do well in this role.
I was thinking, I think we already put her in our Soylent Green remake, but... Oh, I forget her name, but from Westworld, she plays the main replicant.
Oh, Evan Rachel Wood. Yeah, she'd be great.
Yeah.
Ooh. Even has Rachel in her name. The other one I was going to say was Alicia Vikander.
Oh, yeah, from Ex Machina.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of typecast her a little bit.
Yeah.
She'd still do a good job of, like, the soft and delicate, but intense.
You know who did a great android? Scarlett Johansson, right? Yeah.
I always forget that they made the Ghost in the Shell live action movie. I always forget that exists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is probably the best, really.
I think Alicia Vikander is a really good get, and she hasn't done in anything since Tomb Raider, so...
Yeah, bring her back. I miss her.
Oh, and then I think she's married to Michael Fassbender, and he would play a pretty good Deckard, actually.
But then how do we justify that with the Prometheus lore?
Oh, good point.
He's already in that universe, you know what I mean?
Oh, well, they could have stole his DNA to make that, right?
Mm.
They, like, non-consensually took his DNA. They're like, I'm going to build the perfect android, you know?
Sebastian Stan as Rick Deckard could be good as well. He's always good.
Yeah, he's kind of, yeah, soft. I'm standing by Tom Hardy. I think Tom Hardy's your guy.
I just don't think I've seen him be good in many things. Oh, no, like Mad Max and stuff. That's pretty
much exactly what I'm thinking. It's Mad Max. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It is Mad Max.
That's true, actually. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy. All right, what other roles have we got in this? We got Roy.
Oh, who would be Roy? This might come out of left field, but Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson's good.
Because he can do a bit unhinged. Oh, you know what I just thought, actually, fellas? For Deckard, another option apart from Tom Hardy would be Christian Bale.
Oh, Christian Bale is very good, actually.
He would do he would do like a emotionally constipated misogynist.
Yeah, yeah, he's really good.
Yeah,
I'd like that a lot because we got to have Tyrell, right?
Yeah,
you could get Christian Bale to do Tyrell or something like that.
Christian Bale could do anything. Tyrell could also be Gary Oldman.
Oh, yeah, Gary Oldman's good,
which would be very Fifth Element, you know.
I think the other one to recast would be Pris, which is Daryl Hannah's replicant, because she gets quite a lot to do in the movie. What's her name from Pearl? Mia Goth, I think, would be good.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't want it to sound mean, but she does give off a replicant vibe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
For me, it would be Mackenzie Davis.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. But she's in Blade Runner 2049, though, Sandy.
Oh, is she? I forgot. Oh, my God, she is. She's playing the literal same character as well. She's got the exact look. That's so funny. Thank you. I completely fucking forgot about that.
What a great choice. I'm sure other people would pick that as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I nailed it. Are we forgetting anyone?
Sebastian, I guess.
Oh, like fucking Elijah Wood.
that's a good one, actually.
Or Tobey Maguire, his twin. Or, and this might be a little out of left field, but could potentially work very well, Macaulay Culkin.
Oh, yeah!
I love that. I want Macaulay Culkin in more things. He was in American Horror Story recently, and that's about it. I think that'd be, yeah.
He could do it, you know?
Yeah.
Macaulay Culkin is Sebastian, and that is how...
That's a vibe. I like it. Put him in there.
It's a vibe.
That is our remake of Blade Runner, our Sofia Coppola remake of Blade Runner.
Yeah.
From the perspective of Rachel.
I like that you're having this perspective from the Tyrell Corporation, right? Because we can show the goings-on of making replicants and other things, which is ironic because we're seeing it from the perspective of a replicant watching all these things and then learning about the fact that she is a replicant and being like, oh, fuck, you know, that sort of thing. But we could also have all these fancy stuff because there we saw from the Harrison's perspective the sort of like the slums.
And now we get to see kind of the way the other side lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rich, you know. and then we can have my freaky zoo of weird creatures.
Yeah. You really want your freaky zoo, don't you?
Yeah, I want some freaky zoo creatures right. that are like genetically engineered. It'll be like the fucking Star Wars scene where they go to the casino in that really great film that everybody loves.
It is a good film. I like it. Not that scene, though. Well, that is our remake of Blade Runner, and that is our entire episode of Blade Runner. Sandy, thank you for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me back again, lads.
Now, this comes out first Monday of May. Is your most recent event, that's probably already happened, hasn't it?
Yes, I will have just had, I will have just done Overtime, which is on May 4th, which is our comedy office LARP. But if you want to follow along with the LARPs, we are on Instagram at medusa.larp, L-A-R-P, on Instagram, if you want to kind of keep up with the different immersive events and roleplay events that we do at Medusa.
Exactly. And you also have, if people want to go into space, I believe that you have a certain room that people could do that in, Sandy.
Yeah, Earthrise 1. I believe that is also earthrise.1 on Instagram. It's my escape room. You should come play. It's rated one of the best escape rooms in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
It's 5 stars, yeah.
So head along, links in the episode description. Sandy, thank you for joining us once again. This was a lot of fun. Zach, we are on everything at Oldie Buddy Goodie Pod, Instagram, Facebook, if you want to keep in touch with the show, see the fun images of our remakes, all that sort of stuff. You can find it there. We are also patreon.com/ oldie buddy goodie pod if you want to get ad-free episodes, and sometimes early if I finish editing them in time, up there as well for $1 a month. But if you want to spend a little bit more, you get bonus episodes, and Zach, out right now, it's the bonus episode on S. Darko, the Donnie Darko sequel that no one remembers.
So that film, funnily enough, is also a bit like this film, where it's, like, mysterious and built on vibes, except the mystery and the vibes both suck. So, you know, want to learn more, you could hear my angry rant about it on the Patreon.
Up on Patreon, that's right. And we got another episode coming out in May, because the Donnie Darko one was our April bonus episode. Our May bonus episode, we're going back to bloody Friday the 13th, we're doing Jason Goes to Hell.
Ooh, yeah.
As we start to finally wrap up our series on those movies, because it's been taking us a while. But before we wrap things up, Zach, I got to pick next week's movie.
Oh, that's true.
And we're going to 1983. And speaking of Harrison Ford not wanting to be in movies, we could do Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi.
Ah.
But we're never doing a Star Wars movie on the podcast, though. We're never doing that. So
never doing that.
Not gonna pick that movie.
Because we both personally hate those films very deeply.
We hate them so much. Speaking of Friday the 13th, there's a movie that came out in 83 called Sleepaway Camp, which is a horror movie set at a summer camp that is... I've seen it quite a few times. It's really dumb and funny, and it's got a twist at the end that is so problematic and hilarious that I just kind of love that movie. This is really fun. Anyway, I don't want to pick it though.
What about The Man with Two Brains?
Oh my goodness.
It's a comedy movie starring Steve Martin.
Oh.
Yeah, who's a lad.
Love that guy. Oh wow, so many Stephen King adaptations.
Yeah.
There's Cujo, which is the dog one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
John Carpenter's Christine, The Haunted Car. There's so many. What?
That's a lot.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch.
What about Jaws 3D?
No. No. What about Octopussy?
Nah, I saw that and I didn't want to mention it. Oh, God. What about Twilight Zone, the movie?
Oh, ooh. That movie. Yes. I know a lot about the behind the scenes of that movie. I've never seen it, though.
Oh, really?
There is Tom Cruise in Risky Business. That's the first Tom Cruise movie that I think we've had as an option.
I've been recommended that movie incredibly recently, actually. I have not seen Risky Business, but literally last night someone told me I needed to see it. It was a classic.
Wow.
And not what you would expect. So, yeah. So, if you guys are feeling adventurous, that would be the one I would pick if I were you.
There you go.
All right.
There's... Monty Python's The Meaning of Life.
Forget everything I said. Watch that one.
Scarface,
classic. Oh, there's a movie called War Games, which I saw as a kid. It's a computer that a bunch of kids play with. It's kind of like Ender's Game, where you're like, this is just a fun bunch of kids playing with the computer. Oh my god, they're doing war crimes.
Oh no.
It's a fun little 80s movie.
Superman 3.
I don't like Superman 3.
Yeah.
I don't like that one. That one's not good, actually. Oh, there is a Stephen King adaptation to a movie that to a book that I read recently called The Dead Zone. I read that pretty recently, actually. It was not great, but be interesting to see a movie of that. Also, it is directed by Cronenberg, so that's fun.
I was going to suggest Krull, because that one's a film I've always wanted to see. Brave Prince and his companions embark on a mission to get a legendary weapon, and it's just like a big boomerang with blades on it, which looks amazing. I've always wanted to see that one.
Yeah, it's one of Liam Neeson's first breakout movies.
What
else is there? Ooh, Videodrome. I've always wanted to watch Videodrome. Hang on a second. Videodrome is another bloody Cronenberg movie. Hang on a second here. But The Dead Zone, which is a Stephen King adaptation, is also a Cronenberg movie. Zach.
Oh, no, Sandro, don't tell me.
Zach, what if we did a bit of a bonus battle between two Cronenberg movies?
It has been a while since we've done a bonus battle.
Has been a while, and the last bonus battle that we did was both Mel Brooks movies, so what if we completely flip the script and we do a horror bonus battle from the king of body horror himself, David Cronenberg?
Yeah, I'm down for it. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I've always wanted to watch Videodrome, and The Dead Zone was a weird book, and I want to see them try and make it into a movie, so I think that'd be pretty fun. Also, Cronenberg is in Star Trek Discovery. That's just a rare, I don't know. He's in it for some reason. It's not very good. Don't watch it. All right, we'll do that next week. Bonus battle. And that's the entire episode. Now, Sandy, I've been making Zach do all of these episodes back-to-back without a break. Do you think that I should let Zach have a rest in between these episodes?
Are you asking me to take pity on Zach or something?
Yeah. Whoa! Don't put it like that. Whoa! What do you mean?
Rescue him from his torment, or
let's just say, are you going to let Zach see the unicorn? Do you want Zach to have a little bit of a snap?
I would like to dream of electric sheep, please. let me have a sleep.
Yeah, put him to bed.
Yay! All right. Like certain directors that are out there making movies.
I'm exactly.
Going to be put to bed, or should be put to bed.
All right, well, here I go. Here's your charging cable.
I've got your charging cable.
I'll come over and I'll just...
What are you talking about?
Oh, there's no port. There's no port anywhere here. Zach, you're a human. You're not a robot. You can't go to sleep. I can't put you on charge.
What are you talking about? I'm so confused. Why have you handed me a cable?
Oh, well, there's no charging port in you, Zach, so I guess we just got to do the next episode.
What? No, she said I could sleep. What are you talking about?
I can't say I didn't try.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Oh, God, the portal opened. Oh, God.
Here we go.
Oh, oh.